It is a big idea, a new world order.
Your world is not what it seems. Alex Hansery, Outside the Box.
Broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, I'm Alex Hansery, and this is Outside the Box, streaming live worldwide at oraclebroadcasting.com and alexhansery.com. Well, the world is certainly going through an amazing transformation. From talks of a global currency following a dollar collapse to the idea of an upcoming world war between China, Russia, and the United States that will pave the way for a new world order, world government, global government. We obviously today have a lot to talk about. While the mass of humanity is going to be surprised by the coming challenges, I can tell you about one guy who's not going to be surprised for obvious reasons. He's predicted much of the things that are taking place today and many things that have yet to happen. Dubbed the most controversial speaker on the planet, an author of over a dozen books translated into multiple languages, he also speaks all around the world. He's going to be coming to Seattle in late 2009. His description of the global conspiracy, the nature of reality, things of that nature, have taken the world by storm over the course of the last 15 years or so. And he's becoming more popular every day. Ladies and gentlemen, for his third time on this show, I bring you David Icke.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
David, how are you?
I'm good, Alex. You?
Very good. I heard you're working on a new book that's going to be coming out sometime.
Yeah, I'm spending the summer working on that, and it's going to take things a long way further forward than we've got so far. And then I'm traveling for the second half of the year, from September to Christmas, all over the world. And like you say, I'm coming to Bellingham, just north of Seattle, just south of Vancouver, on October the 4th, and coming to Phoenix about 2 weeks later, and then coming in all over Europe. And it's an extraordinary, almost pinch-yourself feeling for me, because not many years ago, you know, I was struggling to fill many seats with people who wanted to hear this stuff. But over the last particularly, I don't know, 5-6 years, maybe I can look back to 9/11 as one turning point, and the invasion of Iraq as another one. And then after that, the increasing Orwellian impositions around the world have focused people's minds on the fact that the world is not like they thought it was. It's not controlled by the forces they thought it was. And if we don't address it and address it now, then we're going to get overwhelmed by the speed of change that is in the pipeline.
Before we go to break here in about a minute, just give us some additional information about David Icke. Your story has been shared all over the web. But just to set this up, some of the stuff that you talk about in your books.
Well, I started off on a journey in 1990, I guess, consciously, and I started to uncover the fact that there were networks of secret societies and interbreeding families that were actually controlling the world centrally, like a transnational corporation, which we can get into later. And then that journey moved me on into what appeared first to be bizarre areas of interdimensional manipulation, and crucially, and this is my passion and focus now, the nature of reality itself. Because if we don't understand that, we can't possibly understand what's actually happening in the world.
And as you say, David, if we don't have freedom of thought to believe a different way, we really don't have freedom at all. Folks, his website is davidicke.com. We'll be back in a few. Stay with us.
Ladies and gentlemen, The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically, opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. We decided long ago that the dangers of excessive and unwarranted concealment of pertinent facts far outweigh the dangers which are cited to justify it. Even today, there is little value in opposing the threat of a closed society by imitating its arbitrary restrictions. Even today,
and things are moving in light speed. JFK warned us about it, and we saw what happened to him. Economic meltdown. There's talks about the dollar being replaced by the yuan, basically the Chinese currency. This is being talked about in the news. At the same time, we're seeing Barack Obama for debt relief, talking about giving jet technology to the Chinese. A lot of stuff is taking place. David, you've been talking about the concept of a world economy, followed by a microchip population. What would you like to talk about today in regards to the economy? Things are definitely moving fast. There's a lot of focus concern about something shifting about this summer of 2009.
Well, for people that are new to this, there's a few coordinates which, if we understand them, the world starts to be much easier to read, much easier to decode. One of them is that there is a network of interbreeding families going back to the ancient world who have, over this period, created a secret society equivalent, a secret society version of a transnational corporation. The headquarters, at operational level anyway, is in Europe, London, massively. And in the different countries, they have what you might call subsidiary companies, subsidiary networks of this global web. And their job is to manipulate that country's finance, politics, media, ownership level, etc., corporations, and the institutions that dictate the direction of society. So when there is a diktat, an order, if you like, from the center of the web, the headquarters, that this is the next phase of the plan, and this is projected forward a long way forward, not just a few days or a few weeks, we're talking decades and decades, then each of these subsidiary networks goes to work in their country to make it happen. This is why when I've been to about 50 countries now researching this and talking, and you see the same things happening around the same time, often justified, invariably, in fact, justified by the same reasons or problems. And also, sometimes even the legislation is worded the same. This is how it works. Now, the goal is a centrally controlled global Orwellian dictatorship, a global version of Nazi Germany, in fact. And they have certain techniques that they use, two particular techniques, to advance this agenda of centralization of power. And the centralization of power comes from the fact that, clearly, if there's a few of you compared with the population you want to control, you have to centralize decision-making. If you don't, there's too many points of diverse decision-making for you to control the direction and the outcome of society. Now, these two major mass mind and emotional manipulation techniques, one I call problem-reaction-solution. You create the problem, give the public a false version of the cause of the problem, and you want the public to then say something must be done so that you can then offer the solution to the problem you have covertly engineered and created. The other one is what I call the totalitarian tiptoe, and that is that you know from the start you're going from A to Z, but you know if you go there in one leap or too big a leap, then the change is so great that people look up from the game shows and the sport and they say, what the hell is going on? So you go in increments, in stages, as big as you can get away with. But what you're trying to do is not go so much in one go that people see, hey, that something's not right here. Now, you put all this together with the fact that they want a world government, which will dictate to every country in the world, a world army that would impose the will of the world government, A world central bank to control all global finance, a world currency, which in the end would be all electronic, single electronic currency, no cash and no individual currencies, and a microchip population connected to the global satellite positioning system. So if you take all that together and look at what's happening in terms of finance now, there has been a calculated engineering of a global economic collapse, which goes way back into the Reagan-Bush administration. And a common theme through that, through the Clinton years and through most of Boy Bush's years, and of course Father Bush's period as well, is a man called Alan Greenspan. Alan Greenspan is a, as public figures go, very, very high in this secret society network, because the real players in it are working behind the scenes. They don't put themselves on public display. And he orchestrated a policy through all those years as head of the Federal Reserve, a private cartel of banks that masquerade as the Central Bank of America. And key to that was constant deregulation, taking away all the checks and balances that stop greed, which of course dominates global finance and financial institutions, from getting truly out of hand. And what they did was take these checks and balances away, knowing that this primal greed that drives this financial system would then have a free-for-all, which is exactly what happened. And so just before the preparation was complete and the button was going to be pressed on the crash, of course, Greenspan got out, and in came Bernard Bernanke, as head of the Federal Reserve, to operate through this period of the collapse. The idea is in three stages. It is to collapse the economy. They did that back in the fall. Secondly, it was, and this is what is unfolding now, to get governments to empty their guns, if you like, symbolically, with all the responses that they can use to respond to that original collapse. And what has this been? Of course, it has been spending trillions and trillions of borrowed money to throw at the banks that have caused the problem and to so-called stimulate the economy. And the idea is for this to disappear into black holes. And I've been watching some of the congressional Senate hearings and committees where people have been questioned in the last few weeks, where does all that money go? And it's like, we're working on it. And the idea then, when all the gun barrels are empty in terms of government responses, because there's nothing more to give, the idea then is to crash the economy big time and bring the whole thing crashing down. And then the massive global problem will be followed by massive global solutions, the very network and structure I'm talking about.
And they want the people to fund the shackles on their ankles as they build up a police state. Stay with us, folks. David Icke is with us today. His website, davidicke.com. Check it out.
Open your mind. 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 Open your mind.
Change. That's what the man says is coming. But some of us right now, looking at our current economic policies, looks like change is the only thing we're going to have left when all this is said and done. And what will happen to America, our sovereignty, our security? Well, only time will tell, but I don't think it's going to be much more time. David, Barack Hussein Obama, this guy proposing change, many links to secret societies, Even Dick Cheney's wife said he was the eighth cousin. She was laughing about it on TV, eighth cousin of Dick Cheney. And we've got Skull and Bones advisors during the campaign. We see many other groups, Trilateral Commission, Council on Foreign Relations. How would you like to, I know you wrote an article about Obama recently, kind of make sense out of what we're seeing here?
Well, it's pretty straightforward, really. They've changed the mask, but they've not changed the face. I talked a few minutes ago about problem, reaction, solution, create the problem, then offer the solution. And what we've seen and are seeing is a presidential version of that. Bush was brought in to front up. That's all he did. I mean, he just said to sign the documents into legislation, not to make any decisions. But he was brought in to front up, not least through people like Greenspan in the background, major problems, overseas wars, great pressure and stretching of the American military, and right towards the end of his period in office, massive economic problems. So he was there to create clear problems. And what you're looking at, as I say, in problem, reaction, solution, is then stage two, a reaction from the public. Do something. Oh, my goodness, what's going to happen? Fear, outrage, and all this stuff. So Obama has been brought along and sold in the most grotesque misrepresentation of who he is. As the solution, he's the man coming in with a smiling face, and of course his greatest asset electorally was he wasn't Bush. And he had and has people behind him, like David Axelrod, who is a massive spin doctor and manipulator who ran his election campaign in close association with this guy, Rahm Emanuel, who's the White House chief of staff, who is the 24/7 controller of Obama, because he's just a front man. And what they did in the campaign, Axelrod's campaign, was brilliantly create a blank screen on which the people projected on Obama their version of what his cliche mantras of change, of hope, of something to believe in, meant to them. And they were able to do that because at no time did Obama define in any detail whatsoever what he meant by change, hope, and something to believe in. And if he had, honestly, he would never have got elected. But because he didn't, it was just this vague, he stands for something good, and we're going to support him, and it's going to be great. And I know what he means because this is what it means to me. And, of course, once that had been played and he got elected, then it's game over, a done deal. And you then start to see the real Obama and the real agenda of those that control Obama. And this is why more and more people that were Obama groupies, and there's still an enormous number who haven't seen it yet because they're in denial, but a very significant number of them are already starting to question what they thought before, as a stream of appointments to his government are anything but change, but business as usual, and all the things he was going to do he's going back on, and it was always going to happen. It didn't take a genius to see it if you did any delving into his background. I mean, the man's a crook. I mean, he comes from the most, one of the most corrupt political systems in the world, Chicago. You do not prosper politically in Chicago unless you are either with the corruption or you're acceptable to it. Not only did he survive and prosper, he soared like an eagle through that system because, you know, he was a good front man who did all the right things by the corrupt cross-party network manipulative Illinois Combine, as they call it, that runs that city and that state. And so when you look at what we've just been talking about, the economic side of that, how did he react? If you look at his speeches and how he justified these trillions of dollars thrown into the ether, thrown at the banks that caused the problem, he almost word for word, it's extraordinary, repeated what George Bush said in the fall when he and Henry Hank Paulson were justifying hundreds of billions being thrown at the banks. Exactly the same. Who did he then bring in his administration of change? Real banking classic insiders who were responsible for the problem. People like Timothy Geithner, who was president of the New York Federal Reserve Bank, the major bank in the Federal Reserve system, who he makes Treasury Secretary. He brings in Larry Summers, again, a banker's boy to his fingertips, who was involved in the creation of the problem. Larry Summers, who, this is a man who, Obama, who has fundamental connections to Kenya, maybe even so fundamental he was born there, but he brings in Larry Summers, who became infamous in 1991 when he was chief economist for the World Bank, when he signed a memo advising the bank to dump its toxic materials in third world countries, poor countries, because the amount of compensation they would have to pay for the death and destruction that would and ill health that would follow would be much less than if they did it in a country in the Western world and the developed world. This is the kind of mentality you're looking at. He brings in a stream of people from the banking insider network to who were caused the problem to then offer the solutions to it. And what were the solutions? They were simply to hurl all this staggering money at the banks. This man is not about change. He's about continuing the agenda that has been going on decade after decade. But because he smiles a lot and he reads his teleprompters that he's kind of super glued to, if you watch him. I mean, you know, Barack Obama, of course, people like David Axelrod are supervising the words that go on those teleprompter screens that he reads. But on St. Patrick's Day, Obama actually thanked himself for inviting everybody because when he went to the lectern and his teleprompters, the Irish Prime Minister's speech was on the teleprompters instead of his own. And he read it, or started to, until he realized, hey, this is not me. So,
like Elvis Presley, thank you. Thank you very
it's
much.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. The brilliance of the image manipulation of Obama still has large numbers of people, though falling every day, I would suggest, who see this man as some kind of savior when he's just a front man who does as he's told and smiles a lot. So it's Obama that is there to front up the solutions, alleged solutions, that are going to advance this agenda of all the things that I talked about earlier.
When we come back, we'll talk about what could be happening next. As our economy falls, so does our military. But what then? Knowing what's taking place with China and Russia and the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. We'll talk about that and much, much more in this next segment. David Icke is our guest.
You are now listening to the Oracle Broadcasting Network, the home of cutting-edge talk radio.
The Russian professor of economics has put forward his own theory about the impact the credit crunch will have on America. Joining the studio now by Igor Panarin, who says the U.S. will split into six pieces because of the crisis.
When in fall of 2009, there may a huge crisis may develop, and eventually it will lead in summer of 2010 that the territory of the United States will be divided into six different states.
My immediate sources, do you think this would have happened, may happen according to your theory, if it weren't for the financial crisis? And if this scenario did happen, where would the power base be?
Well, the main power base, there will be actually three power bases on the territory.
So, ladies and gentlemen, obviously, this stuff is being talked about, the concept of the U.S. breaking up. David, to get a brief history of this, I want to get a closer look at China and Russia and how they came about to be the nation states that they are today. Some people think there's a real war coming, but it looks like we've given China a lot of weaponry and high-tech tools that can do massive devastation. We've also seen partnerships between the Russians and the United States.
Well, there's so many levels to this to really understand what's going on. First of all, as I've been saying for years now, the idea is to use America to destroy America. Simple reason. Again, what we talked about earlier is fundamental for everything else that comes out of it. If you want a world government that is going to be the global dictatorship, you can't have superpowers. You can't have superpowers that have military and financial might enough to say no to what you are saying everyone must do. So the idea has been to use America militarily and financially to bring about the end of America. And I was interested in those little clips you just were playing about breaking America up into regions, because this is the idea. Under the world government, they want a series of super states, the European Union, the American Union, the African Union, which of course they already have, and the Asia Pacific Union, maybe others too. And they want to break the nation states up within those super states into regions. The European Union has already produced a map of Britain and other European countries broken up into regions. Why? Because it de-unifies any unified response to the edifice of power above them. So the idea that you're talking about in relation to regionalizing America is absolutely what is planned. And to do that, of course, you need to create massive problems that you can use the change to be justified by. Now, in terms of Russia and China, again, we come back to what I talked about earlier, this transnational corporation-type secret society global network. This spans borders, and while we, the public, see countries and names of countries, China, Russia, America, South Africa, whatever, they don't deal with it like that. These are different assets, different subsidiary companies of the global network. And so it's no contradiction when you understand it from that perspective that America would, from the public perspective, ludicrously be handing this high technology and other things and getting absolutely drowned in debt to people like the Chinese. I mean, the Russian Revolution, the Lenin-Trotsky Russian Revolution, was actually manipulated and paid for by the international bankers in the so-called West. The Mao Revolution was the same. I mean, this is not something that is happening within a country. It's manipulated from this through this central network I was talking about. And the idea is to bring these superpowers into conflict to break up the superpower position in the world, so that the world government then has total power to dictate from a central point. And I was told back in the 90s, I remember going on the Jeff Renz show and saying this in the 1990s, watch China, because I was told by a serious insider that the idea was that China would start to build up militarily, but it would more importantly start to build up financially, which of course now we can see, and that the idea was to bring China into a war that would be the third world war of the three that were planned right from the start, to transform the world from what it was before World War I to what it is designed to become after World War III, which is this centralized global dictatorship.
And just to interject briefly, if you look at the news in the last couple of years, we see information like China hacking into Pentagon, but the government not very concerned. We see articles from today where we're putting hundreds of billions of dollars into the war in the Middle East, but Obama is going to be cutting the budget for missile defense. Alarm bells are ringing, and in the future, a lot of people are getting guns right now, but they're not going to have the ammunition, and they're banning reloading. So we're not in a position to truly defend ourselves in the long term against an invasion, no matter how many guns are out there, because of the ammunition issue. So many different factors. And then you're talking about regions. They're talking about the Chinese mostly controlling, in the future, the West Coast.
cities, states like mine, Portland, Oregon, and there's Seattle and Washington and the budget crisis with California. We could really see, David, couldn't we, the whole lot of states go bankrupt and then giving territory lands, they're debating this now, over to China.
Well, even in the ludicrous legality, I would say not law, but legality. I mean, what is legal is not necessarily morally lawful, if you want to use that analogy. China has at some point the right financially to come and say, hold on a second, you can't pay this vast amount of debt you have to us, so what do we get in return?
Isn't it set up to be that way?
Exactly it is. And this this insider that told me back in the 90s about watch China, because that's where it's leading, was also telling me that they have fantastic technology and technological potential that has been developed, of course, through those long, long years of being a closed country, in which, and this is one example he gave, he said they have the ability to demanifest troops and remanifest them behind enemy lines. He talked too at the time, something you've just raised, about the fact that they will be moving in on taking over American land. So, you know, it's like so many things, so many strands have been bubbling away under the surface, and now the time has come to tie them together. And there was always going to be this window when all that's remained hidden would hit the surface where we could see it, because it has to if what has been covertly manipulated is designed to change society that we can see, which it is. There has to be a moment when it breaks the surface and you start to see it, and that's that this time we're in now. And that's why you're seeing across this great spectrum of apparently unconnected but totally connected strands across military, finance, government, etc., you're seeing all these things suddenly come to the surface. We're seeing, if you like, you know, the latter part of this long-term plan to centrally control the world, not just through world government, but through surveillance, and data control, microchipping, and all the rest of it. We still have time to do something about it, but we got to start doing it and not just talking about it.
This next topic is going to lead us into the next segment. Of all time, David, for a supposed pandemic that would affect us globally, isn't it interesting? Many other people outside of, you know, the world of David Icke and Alex Jones, you know, have predicted a number of things before we hit World War III. That's an economic crash and some sort of a released pandemic.
Yeah.
All right, what are your thoughts as we get ready for a break here, though, on what we're seeing here with this pathogen that appears to be created in the lab, a combination of bird, pig, and human flus?
Yeah, well, I mean, the problem is that people are so easy to manipulate. My son came home, he's 16, from school a few weeks ago when this thing first broke, this swine flu thing. And he said, Dad, what's this swine flu thing all about? I said, why do you ask? He said, because the kids at school are terrified. Said, every time someone sneezes, everyone's looking at them. What's it all about? And you know, that's how easy it is to create the panic, the problem that then gets people to say, do something so you can offer the solution. I find it interesting that France and Britain and many other countries have announced that they are buying vast amounts of vaccine. And suddenly, I did a newsletter about this at the last weekend. Suddenly, you're starting to see this thing start to be talked about widely in France, in Britain, and other places. Compulsory vaccination. That is one of the solutions to the problem that I see coming, and it could well be that around the fall, the autumn, they might really push this thing on and create a panic. But once we have compulsory vaccination, what the hell is in that vaccination? How can it affect us physically, mentally, and emotionally on extraordinary levels? That's the answer. And so compulsory vaccination is big time one of their agendas.
David Icke is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be talking about the nature of reality and other things in the second hour. For now, stay with us and check out his site, davidicke.com. My friends, we also have to strengthen our minds and our spirits, because if they are going to unleash something, we need to know how to take care of ourselves and boost our immune system. And maybe we'll talk about that, get David Icke's opinion on colloidal silver. But I can testify, and so can many others, that Portland is undergoing strange, bizarre weapons testing, chemtrail spraying. The Navy's doing drills. I don't know if you heard about that, David, over 4 states in our area. And it includes using electromagnetic weapons and depleted uranium and surveillance, counter-surveillance. And there's more black helicopters now appearing in our city doing urban warrior training. So in terms of this pandemic, first of all, do you think people should be taking measures for their own health right now in terms of colloidal silver and other things?
Well, I'm no expert on an alternative health. I mean, a lot of people get a lot of benefit, it seems, from colloidal silver and swear by it. And, you know, my... The whole basis of where I'm coming from is to become conscious, to get out of the control of mind, which I'm sure we'll get into in the second part of the show. And from that, everything else comes. Because once you unleash, you unlock, you pull the cork out of these connections to higher levels of consciousness, you then know. How to respond to things. You know what is best to do. You know where it's best to be. You know what it's best to put into your body. And it's so vital that we move our point of observation from little me to I am all consciousness. That movement of our point of observation transforms the way we see the world and see ourselves, and it unleashes levels of awareness that have been, or we've been denying ourselves by getting caught in mind. Because, you know, mind is a very low level of awareness, and it's like a conduit that allows us to experience this reality. If I want to go on the internet, I can't just go on the internet. I have to have a conduit to go on the internet called a computer. And we have what I call body computers, body computer minds, which are the interface, the conduit through which consciousness experiences this virtual reality universe, because that's what it is. And what the manipulation at the bottom line is about, because behind the people appear to be in power in the deep recesses of these secret society networks, they understand the basis of reality. And with that knowledge in their hands, when the population is systematically kept from that knowledge through religion and mainstream science and all that stuff, it puts them in a tremendous point of power. And the bottom line foundation is to move our point of observation from higher levels of consciousness looking into this world to the perspective of body-mind, to that body-computer level of reality. And it's a bit like going on the internet and then the computer taking over where you go and what you make of it, instead of you sitting at the keyboard, who's supposed to be in charge, consciousness, making those decisions. We are awareness, and where that awareness is focused dictates how we see the world. And the idea is to hold us in this body-mind level of perception, which filters reality through the 5 senses, and therefore out of higher levels of consciousness. And once you are in this mind point of observation, you're looking through the five senses to get a fix on who you are, what's happening in the world, and all these questions. And you're looking through the five senses to what? To the information provided by the ludicrously called education system, through the mainstream media, through politicians, etc. In other words, the whole foundation of the conspiracy, from which everything else comes, is to isolate people in the mind-body perspective, the five-sense perspective of reality, and then program that body-mind perspective with the view and perception of reality that suits the agenda. That's what problem, reaction, solution, and all these other different techniques are actually doing. And the stuff that we have in food, the electrochemical poisons and pollution that we call food, is there, and genetically modified food also, is there to destabilize genetically, chemically and electromagnetically the body computer system so that it doesn't function efficiently as a receiver transmitter for consciousness. It's working on a fraction of its potential. The on one level, the body computer system is electrochemical. And if you therefore destabilize that by the electrochemical shite that you put into food and drink, and into water supplies with things like fluoride, then you are basically putting big viruses in the computer so it doesn't operate correctly, and it gives us a distorted view of reality. It stops us thinking straight, and it destabilizes us emotionally.
You know, one thing you said the last time we talked on Outside the Box, the television show, which is over at Google, at the very end, I asked what you thought we can do to prepare. And then I had to ponder your response for a little bit, because I was of the mindset of getting super prepared and super prepared. In a way, I still am. But not being so attached to the body computer and seeing ourselves as infinite consciousness. And that makes sense. That you also wrote in a recent article about, you know, the New World Order wants a violent revolution to create a bunch of fear and hysteria and panic. And a lot of people are being set up for a trap. Did you want to talk about that before we go out to break?
Well, we're controlled through the reptilian brain. The reptilian brain, which is kind of in the brainstem area, is where we get the survival mechanism from, along other parts of the brain, but massively the reptilian brain, the R-complex, as scientists call it. And it's where we get primitive emotional responses from, quote. It's where we get a desire for power over. It's where cold-blooded behavior comes from. No empathy with the consequences for others of our actions and all this stuff. And if you look at all these manipulative techniques like problem, reaction, solution, that people talk about mind control. And yes, that certainly happens, and it's certainly something to big time address. But the biggest trigger are emotional reactions. That's what these techniques of manipulation are looking for. Problem, reaction, solution is not looking for a reaction of, oh, well, I'm going to sit down calmly here, and I'm going to consider this, what I'm being told here, and I'm going to look into this, and I'm going to investigate that, and I'm calmly going to make a decision. No. It's about, do something, quick! And that's coming from the reptilian brain. And I've been talking writing for a long time about the fact that there are entities operating just outside the frequency range of visible light, which is the only frequency range our eyes can access, that are entities that do take a reptilian form. And they are manipulating us through the reptilian brain, which they completely understand, because they certainly completely understand that genetics. And the survival mechanism is constantly on edge. It's constantly scanning the environment, looking for predators, looking for threats, looking for danger. So when you frighten people with viruses and pandemics, when you frighten them with war on terrorism and, oh my goodness, what's the next terrorist threat? That is all completely accessing people and manipulating them through the reptilian brain and the primitive emotional responses of survival, like fight or flight, when you face danger and you either hit the guy or run. So understanding the reptilian brain is to understand how so much, indeed Carl Sagan said this in a book about the reptilian genetics of the human body, to understand the reptilian brain is to understand fundamentally more about human behavior and human manipulation.
And that's where we're going next. Stay with us, folks. The Nature of Reality with David Icke. Hour 2, up ahead. As America limps on its last legs, a pillar of truth has risen. You're listening to the Oracle Broadcasting Network. An interesting book came into my life recently. It's called The Holographic Universe by Michael Talbot. It was weird because two people sent it to me in a single week, my friend in Australia and another friend of mine, after about five people asked me whether I've read it or not. And I guess it took that many people to tell me about the book before I picked it up. And David Icke also goes into a lot of the stuff, and he references this book in his book, Infinite Love is the Only Thing That's Real, Everything Else is an Illusion. David, reading stuff like this really changes your worldview when the mainstream media keeps us pretty much, watching the ball games go back and forth like the hypnotist, drooling, drinking our fluoridated Pabst Blue Ribbon. It's a whole different world.
People have looked at some of my stuff over the years where I've talked about reptilian entities, operating just outside of what we call visible light, and other things that I've said about the conspiracy. And they've said, oh, this is far out and this is crazy. That is as mild as it's possible to be compared with the reality we're actually experiencing compared with the reality we think we're experiencing. And from about 2003, the thrust of my life has taken me deeply and ever more deeply every day now into the nature of reality. And it is extraordinary. And if you understand this and the population as a whole doesn't, then you are in such a phenomenal position of power. What do I mean? I mean that I'm sitting in a room now and I'm looking around at the books on the shelves and walls and a computer screen and what have you. And it seems so solid and it seems so outside of me, but it isn't. The only place that this exists in this form is in my brain, when it is constructed in this form from electrical signals. And there is no out there in terms of a physical world. What is out there, if you like, is a vibrational construct which we are decoding through the five senses into electrical signals that are transmitted to the brain to be decoded into the world we think we are experiencing outside of us. And I call it the cosmic internet. This reality, this virtual reality universe, is very much in theme like the internet. If I go on a computer in China, that will be significant in a moment. But when I go in a computer in Australia or South Africa or Britain or America or anywhere, I am logging in through the computer into a collective reality. I'm going into the same reality that someone on the other side of the world will go into. And then I make my choices on where I go within that collective reality. I'll go to this website, someone else will go to this website, someone will think of this website something, I'll think something else about it, but we're still sharing the same collective reality. And what we are living in is the cosmic version of the wireless internet. You know, I'm sitting here now, and if this house had the wireless internet, then I'd look around me. Where is it? I can't see it. But if I get a computer and I tune it into the internet, log it into the internet, suddenly out of the ether, out of nowhere, comes the internet on the screen. Well, the body computer is a receiver transmitter of the cosmic internet, and it is decoding that into a reality on the screen. And that symbolic screen exists in the brain. And that's why this world exists physically, illusory physically, inside our head and not outside of us as it seems to be. What's more amazing than that compared with what we think we're
experiencing? We'll be back in a few, David. Stay there, ladies and gentlemen.
We have before us the opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a new world order, a world where the rule of law, not the law of the jungle, governs the conduct of nations. When we are successful, and we will be, we have a real chance at this new world order, an order in which a credible United Nations can use its peacekeeping role to fulfill the promise and vision of the UN's founders. A new world order.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Your World Today. Our guest today is David Icke, davidicke.com. You know, what's interesting about what you're saying, David, most people in the audience can't deny they've been trained through repetition to believe a certain way. Our public, governmental, educational school system, closed off right brain, but stuck in the left, regurgitating information back down on paper with the creative cut off. So what you're saying makes total sense. And reading this book, Holographic Universe, we're really only seeing about 4.5 or 5% of what's out there, the visible light, while the dark matter, the 95%, most people don't even know was there.
That's right. And I'm going into this in the new book in terms of what the Matrix is and the frequency range we call light is fundamental to that. That's the range of frequency in which we're manipulated. And, of course, how we interact with energy, how we interact with these various expressions of radiation, electromagnetic radiation, etc., fundamentally affects us mentally, emotionally, and physically. Now, consciousness can overcome anything, but it's far more powerful than these forces of manipulation, these forces of control. But if we fall into the trap that's been set for us to move our point of observation into the body computer level of reality and perception, then we become totally at the mercy of the laws of this virtual reality, which are nothing more than the laws written into the program. You know, when you have programmers and they write a program for a computer game or something, they decide when they're writing it what those rules are going to be. I mean, there's certain rules they have to keep to because of the nature of the technology they are dealing with. But basically, they write the rules and they write the game as they choose to write it. Now, that's what has happened with the creators of this virtual reality universe that we're experiencing. And we can, like I say, override that and override those rules. You know, there was a few lines in the Matrix movie from the Morpheus character about the fact that although the agents can do fantastic things, they still live in a world based on rules. And these rules can be bent and they can be also overridden. But you have to become conscious to do that, which is the symbolism of the Neo character and an analogy for the One. Oneness. And so once we fall into this computer, body computer level of perception, we fall into that realm of the laws of the virtual reality universe, and then we've basically given our power away to it. And so society has been structured through cradle-to-grave institutional manipulation through education, through the mainstream media, through the manipulation and suppression of real science, and all these things through medicine and the stuff that goes into the body, the vaccines that destabilize the body computer. I mean, when you're putting 25 vaccines into children before the age of two, when the immune system and other systems are still forming and the brain's still forming, I mean, please, you know, it's just extraordinary that people don't see the magnitude of stupidity that's involved with that. And so becoming conscious to override and take control back of the body computer system for the programmer, if you like, to get control back of the computer and where it goes and what it does on the internet is absolutely fundamental, because without that, there is no way of overcoming this power structure that is based on keeping us in this low level of perception, which I call body-mind.
You know, when it comes to reality, David, a lot of people view reality or solutions or consciousness in different ways. And I found there are a lot of people that don't view what we do as conscious. They see it as, you know, dwelling on the negative, because there's a belief out there that, you know, the whole saying, what you focus on increases, that we're just creating more darkness by even talking about the New World Order and the global agenda. But don't we have to identify the disease? Don't we have to properly diagnose the problem if we want to come to a really suitable, effective, powerful solution to change our reality into one that we really want?
Well, I think you're talking about the New Age mentality and offshoots of it. And I call the New Age in one of my books The Last Cul-de-Sac Before the Gold Mine. And I think it is, because when you are breaking out of traditional mainstream religion and you're also rejecting the mainstream science version of reality, then you are in great danger of beginning to understand what you need to understand if the trap is going to be overcome. And so there is the cul-de-sac called the New Age, which is designed to entrap people who are getting too close to rejecting the general run of the program. And happens, and again, we're back to mind. One of the things I think it's important to stress is that mind expresses itself in many, many ways, this body-mind level of perception. The same mind construct which manifests as a Wall Street banker can also manifest as a New Ager. They might be coming from different directions and apparently different perspectives, but they're still stuck in mind. And mind is always looking for ways to protect its preeminence, to protect its control. And it's feeding us perceptions to stop us breaking out of that into consciousness. So, for instance, if you are getting too close to becoming aware enough to break out of mind truly into consciousness, then it will start telling you that to go in this direction is negative, and it will start telling you that some Ashtar command is going to come in a spaceship and save everybody. If you are someone who wants to break out of the mind belief systems of family and religion, it will tell you all the consequences for doing that. Oh, what will your family think? What will the people down the bar think? What about the people at work? People will say you're crazy. You can't do that. You can't walk away. You've got a mortgage. You've got this. You've got that. You must conform. It's not right. So the mind is constantly feeding us these beliefs and these guilts and these misunderstandings to hold on to its preeminence, because the body computer system, the body mind conduit, is not like a computer that I'm looking at my desk now that only reacts to data in the way it's programmed to react. It is biological. It is an energetic computer system which has a form of awareness. It they can therefore respond and think and make decisions. It's that which is constantly chattering in our head 24/7. telling us all the things to worry about and all the things we have to do.
Yeah, we'll continue talking in just a few. I also want to get your thoughts on 2012.
Why are we determined to follow a foreign policy of empire building and preemption which is unbecoming of a constitutional republic?
And there's consciousness in Amy Allen's lyrics. I'd start a revolution. Her message to the children is the reason why they took her off MTV. She said revolution too many times, David, so they took her off. And she's saying, if I can get up in the morning, talking to basically, David, a drunk stone population, if I can get up in the morning and be conscious, I will do something about it. But this revolution isn't about throwing bricks and getting ready to start, you know, fighting your neighbors and shooting people. It's a revolution in the way that we live and in the way that we view reality. And there's a lot of people now with a lot of questions about 2012, and I think they're getting a lot of disinformation from the History Channel. I've interviewed about six people that have been on the History Channel specials, from John Major Jenkins to Pinchbeck, many others, Patrick Gerald from Belgium. So they frame it, though, in a certain way to where it's the end of the world. And so when you talk about 2012 or the possibility of something shifting or the Mayan calendar coming to a completion, end of the world is the only way, David, they seem to be able to view it based on the mainstream media getting to them first, if you know what I mean. So what do you think 2012 could really be all about?
Well, I think we're going to see that ratcheted up massively as we get closer to that time. It's going to be another reason to create massive fear and anxiety. And I must say that I have a kind of a different view of 2012. You know, I call it the if you like, the spiritual Y2K, if we're not careful. And I think it's being turned into that in the reasons that you're talking about, this apocalyptic, the clock is ticking, we're coming to the, you know, midnight, as they say. There is, without question, an energetic change going on of enormous magnitude. And the first book I ever wrote on these subjects after my own extraordinary awakening in 1990, when the top of my head blew off, was called Truth Vibrations. And the reason it was called that was that I understood from that early time that there was a vibrational change coming within my lifetime. There was no sign of it in 1990, I can tell you, but my goodness me, is it obvious now if you know where to look. And that this vibrational change was going to bring to the surface all that's remained hidden. That which has been happening in secret was going to be brought to the surface by this vibrational change. And it was going to act like a spiritual alarm clock for those that were ready to be awakened. And that's why I called it Truth Vibrations. And so I should be someone, of all people, given that background, who should be jumping on 2012 and the Mayan calendar and saying, hey, look, see, it's correct. It's like what I said. But I think there's a lot of disinformation with regards to all that, and I'm absolutely giving it no focus myself in terms of 2012 and sometime in 2012 when this is all supposed to happen. What I am focusing on is the fact that there is a extraordinary energetic change happening, which is, as your article points out that I've just been looking at, is manifesting as strange things happening in the sun, strange things happening energetically all round. And it does fit into what I understood was coming back in 1990, which was this energetic transformation, which was going to fundamentally affect the way humans experienced and understood reality in themselves, was like a veil was going to be lifted, and this was going to make it happen. And it seems to me, Alex, that it's no coincidence that in this time of all times, it's when the forces of control and suppression are, I would suggest, in a panic-stricken way, if you look beyond the calm arrogance of the front, desperately trying to impose more and more controls, the microchip population so that they can get access to the body computer systems and manipulate us mentally, emotionally, and physically, and hold the vibrational expansion down from a distance. The way that they are using and planning to use HAARP, which I feel strongly in some way interrelates with the chemtrails, in an effort to create like a sub-reality in the lower levels of the atmosphere where we live in and we experience, so that there is a mass of communications to the individual and collective human mind,
David,
to throw us off the path, to throw us off the awakening that's going on.
Emotional manipulation?
Well, exactly that, yes. And again, if you can stimulate, because in the end, you know, this body computer is a hologram, and a hologram is a illusory physical a body. It's not a real one. It's an illusory one. We decode vibrational and electrical information into holographic information. And so what we're looking at in the world, as we talked about with the book there, is a holographic world, a holographic body. But what that is, in its essence, is energy. And if you can manipulate that energy, you manipulate all levels of that energetic construct. One and two levels of it are electromagnetic and chemical. So you are affecting people emotionally. Just take a simple example. People take certain poisons and certain drugs which access the body computer chemically, and they have transformations of their emotional state. They can go wild. They can go wild with guns, like some of these people on Ritalin and these other mind-manipulating drugs they give to young people. They can go into mass depression, like some people do when they've been poisoned with mercury, etc. So you can access the body computer, which is multi-leveled, chemical, electromagnetic, energetic, holographic, from many different access points. And one of them is through radio waves, radio transmissions, on the frequency that will sync with the body systems. And that's massively what HAARP is about, bouncing radio waves off the ionosphere and bathing this lower level of Earth reality with a mass of instructions and confusing information to destabilize and to misdirect the mind-body-computer level of perception. Again, if you're coming from consciousness, you override that, but if you're caught in the body computer, body, mind level of perception, then you're caught in this web. And of course, I said to someone once, you know, how do you affect all the fish? You affect the sea. Then you affect all the fish. You don't have to affect every individual fish and go around manipulating them all. You just manipulate the ocean they're swimming through. And what is the symbolic ocean we're swimming through? It's energy. It's electromagnetic fields. And this is all building up. All the things they're throwing at us, all the additives in food and drink, which, again, as I said earlier, destabilize the body computer system, put viruses in effect on a chemical and electromagnetic level. All this together, because, again, connect the dots, all this together is like a massive defense system against this awakening that this energetic change is bringing about. It's the irresistible force against the immovable object, except the immovable object, the manipulation, is not immovable.
And there's something else, David. You don't think we're alone here, and that there's a non-human intelligence running the show. We're going to sum up those ideas in this next segment. This is going to be very interesting, folks. Stick around. David Icke is our guest. His website, davidicke.com.
You are now listening to the Oracle Broadcasting Network, the home of cutting-edge talk radio.
You know, David, a lot of people ask me, Alex, how can this grand conspiracy even be going on? Humans are not that organized. They would never be able to keep something like this secret. Them building this world government. And I'm not so sure it is just men. It seems as if there is a force that we can't identify. It's beyond the Bilderberg Group, CFR. A lot of people think this is the elite, but I think it's as far as we can see. It's like rats in some scientific experiment. Where they're scraping to get out of the cage, kind of like the allegory of the cave, but really they can only see so far. They can see the shadows on the wall. You know what I'm saying? They can only see just one piece of it. I wonder what else is out there. We're going to kind of sum up your ideas here and into what you've been researching and what's in your book, Children of the Matrix, for example.
Yeah, well, in the new book I'm writing now, I'm taking all of this stuff and everything we've talked about tonight really massively forward, because some amazing insights are coming to me every day now. But in terms of this web, this web can be symbolized like a spider's web. You've got the spider in the center, this global web, and the different strands in the web are different secret societies, organizations, corporations, whatever. And the closer the strand, the organization, the secret society is to the spider, the more exclusive and secretive it is. And as you come out from the center of the web, you then start to hit organizations like the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, that do officially exist and start to interact with mainstream society and mainstream politics. But each strand, including the outer strands like that, or through this web, you can create great secrecy because you're operating on the need-to-know technique, where people are only given the information they need to know to make their contribution to the web. They don't have to know what the whole web's about, or even the spider exists. And for many, many, many years now, and I went right out on a limb with this initially, when I first came across the reptilian entities operating just outside of visible light, who were manipulating human society, I went into the internet and I got a net find engine, and I put in variations of reptilian extraterrestrials, reptilian this, reptilian that, and I can tell you a handful of pages came up. You put them in now, tens of thousands of pages come up, more and more people are beginning to talk and write about this. These bloodlines, these interbreeding families, come from the interbreeding of these entities with humans way, way back. Not just the interbreeding either, the genetic manipulation of humans in the far, far ancient world. The human form in general was manipulated and genetically changed. And indeed, when you read articles about people who have studied human DNA, they'll tell you it's very clear that there has been a splicing job here, and it's not actually got to its present state, quote, naturally. And what they've done, because the body is a body computer, which is a receiver-transmitter of this cosmic wireless internet we call the virtual reality universe, or I call it that, they have manipulated the body computer genetically so that it receives a much narrower band of frequencies that it can decode than it did before. So if you're in a room with a cat, for instance, it will react to empty space or what appears to be empty space to us. And we'll say, what's the cat doing? Oh, it's silly, there's nothing there. To the cat, there is something there. And it's my feeling that at one time, humans had a frequency range of a decoding potential where they could see these reptilian entities. And this is why, if you look at the ancient accounts, they talk about them. They talk about seeing them. They talk about and describe them. This is why the oldest form of worship, going back according to mainstream science and research, at least 70,000 years, is the worship of the serpent, the worship of the serpent gods. And through this genetic manipulation, the amount of this virtual reality universe that we could access was massively reduced, which is why the frequency range of visible light that the body can access and decode into holographic reality is tiny compared with the mass matter that actually exists in this universe, as you talked about a little earlier. Now, these particular bloodlines, I call them the Illuminati bloodlines, they are a hybrid that has been specifically bred to create a hybrid a bloodline network that is massively reptilian as well as human. And what this creates is a resonant field, because everything's in the end energy, that has a vibrational compatibility with these reptilian entities that is much greater than the general population. And this allows them to, quote, possess these particular bloodlines far more powerfully than they could in the general population, and to take over their mental, emotional processes, their sense of perception, everything. And so when the secret societies manipulate these bloodlines into positions of power around the world in the various countries, what they're manipulating into power in truth is a vibrational conduit vehicle for these reptilian entities just outside of visible light to manipulate this world while we think we're looking at humans. If you could tease a wider visual frequency range and see what's just beyond the physical that you see through the five senses, you would see entities behind these world figures that are anything but human. And so they are manipulating human society through apparently human elite families, but actually they're just vehicles. They're like empty shells which these reptilian entities could control and manipulate. So you've got reptilian entities controlling China, Russia, America, Britain, all over the world, but they seem to be different physical bodies because our body computer can only read visible light, so that's the level that we read. But behind them is something very, very different.
And we can trace the network by the symbols that they use.
Yes, they have a range of symbols that that they use, which I feature heavily in some of my books. And interestingly, you see, the reptilian brain communicates through visual images. So these symbols are communicating to what? The human reptilian brain. This is why they put so many symbols on display. It's not just for fun, we put our symbols on the display and they won't know what they mean. What a hoot. Those symbols are actually speaking to us through the reptilian brain,
which speaks, communicates
through images.
The body matrix machine might be remembering via cellular memory, if you will, within the body, symbols that may have seen before in the past, ancestors or things of that nature, perhaps a memory of...
Well, again, it's very important that we never lose sight of the fact that in the end everything is energy. Everything is vibrating energy to different frequencies. These are frequency fields which we decode into forms and objects. So when we're looking at these symbols, Alex, what we're actually looking at is an energetic field that carries information. Everything is information. This wireless cosmic internet is information which the body computer reads. It doesn't read much of it now after the genetic manipulation as much as it used to, but it still reads that information into holographic reality. And it's the same with these symbols. Those energy fields that we call symbols of goddesses and serpents and flying dragons, all these things they use and many more, the obelisk and what have you, they carry information. They are information fields, and therefore we are reading them, and most of the levels that we're reading them on, Alex, is below threshold, below what we call the conscious mind, if only it was a conscious mind, and so we're being affected by it fundamentally than ever we understand. It's not just a symbol, it's an information package which communicates with us.
In the last segment, David, let's talk about the future. A new way to perceive the world, a different way of doing things. Like Einstein said, insanity is doing the same thing over and over and over and expecting different results.
Exactly.
We intend to go a different route. Stay with us, ladies and gentlemen. David Icke, davidicke.com. Bookmark it.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Something significant is about to take place on our planet. And we can only go forward, we can't look back, we can't turn this car around, we can only change the direction that we're going, it's a matter of which path we're going to be on. That is up to us. Free will. David Icke, one of his chapters in Infinite Love, is the only thing that's real, everything else is an illusion. One of his chapters is entitled Logging Off. And that's pretty much the title of this last segment here. David Icke, how do we log off? How do you view the situation from here on out?
Well, if you're faced with a situation that you want to change, there's basically two main choices. You can find a solution or you can remove the cause of the problem. And removing the cause of the problem is much more advisable and much more effective. Because, you know, we can run around trying to find solutions when what we need to do is to remove the cause of the problem, and then we don't need a solution. And the cause of the problem is that we have been manipulated into a five-sense body-computer mind level of perception. Now, what this creates is a false identity, so that we look in the mirror and we think the reflection is who we are. When that's the reflection, is the vehicle that we're experiencing and allowing us to experience this reality as the body-computer conduit to this virtual reality universe. And if we come from that level, that false self-identity, we are going to think in terms of limitation. I can't. I have no power. Little me, what can I do? And therefore, we're going to look to others, to protect us, to tell us what to think, and all the rest of it. Fundamental to everything is moving our point of observation from I am the reflection in the mirror to I am infinite consciousness having an experience. I am not my name. I'm not David Icke. David Icke's the name of my experience. It's not who I am. I am all consciousness. So are you. So is everyone listening to this program. So is everything in all existence. So once you move that point of observation, your life starts to change. You stop thinking in terms of I can't, you stop thinking in terms of limitation, and you stop thinking in terms of fear. Because consciousness and awareness of itself has nothing to fear. And one of the things I say to people is, when you're in a situation, ask yourself, what would consciousness do? And would consciousness riot because of something it doesn't like. No. Would consciousness fight a war? No. Would consciousness fear authority and therefore keep its head down and its mouth shut? No. And if once you come from consciousness, you that's your level of self. That fundamentally changes everything. And then we need to look at taking control of the body computer with nothing wrong with it. It's a conduit to allow us to experience this reality. Without it, we wouldn't be doing that. What's happened, instead of the body computer mind serving consciousness, it's become the governor of our perception. And for genetically manipulated and other manipulative reasons, that's exactly what it was, the position we were supposed to be in. We are manipulated through overwhelmingly the reptilian brain. So another way that we can remove the cause of the problem is to look at the traits that we get from the reptilian brain. Cold-blooded behavior, having no empathy with the consequences of our actions for other people. So let's reverse that. Let's remove the cause of the problem. So when we start to observe our behavior, when we start to fall into this lack of empathy, and instead of saying when we're faced with choices or situations, what's the right thing to do for me, say, what is the right thing to do here? What is the fair and just thing to do in this situation? By doing that, you are disconnecting yourself from the cold-blooded me level of the reptilian brain's awareness. You are logging off that particular program. The reptilian brain perceives reality through might is right, through acquisition, through more and more. We can reverse that level of reaction response and log off from the influence of the reptilian brain on our behavior. And crucially, in all this, we can stop reacting emotionally through, quote, as scientists say about the reptilian brain and what we get from it, we can stop reacting from primitive emotional responses. Once we do that, instead of reacting out of fear, reacting out of fight or flight to situations that we face, be it a pandemic, a situation in our lives, terrorism, whatever, we calmly take a deep breath, take a step back, and look at it calmly and sensibly before we make a decision on how we're perceiving this situation. By doing that, we are disconnecting ourselves from one, if not the major mechanism of human control, which is to trigger these primitive emotional responses, all of them based on fear and the survival mechanism. Going on from that, consciousness is always has been and always will be. Consciousness doesn't die. Just as we don't die, we withdraw from the body computer. That's what we ludicrously call death. It's like if I'm sitting here when I finish this interview, I'll shut the computer down and I'll go off in the front room. Symbolically, I've died because my computer has its life force has been switched off, and me, consciousness, has left the room, has left the reality. So consciousness doesn't die. Consciousness is eternal. Consciousness is all possibility, all knowing. So from that point of view, what do we have to get caught in these survival responses for? We have nothing to survive because there is no death. And the fear of death and the survival mechanisms manifest in so many ways and trigger control through the reptilian brain. Fear of death is the classic. Oh, doctor, save me. That's why we give power to doctors and the medical profession and the transnational drug cartel. It's because we have this fear of death. Fear of financial problems, fear of losing your job, fear of losing your partner, fear of what people think of you. All these are expressions of the survival mechanism which allows access to our reality and behavior responses through the reptilian brain. So, again, deep breath. There's nothing to survive. And consciousness if we access it and flow with it, we'll all, and I know this from my own personal experience, we'll always provide what we need. No need to worry about it. No need to panic. No need to, oh my goodness me, what's going to happen? Flow with it and know that what you need will come when you need it. Took me a long time to relax into this, but after a while of going to the brink in my life on so many things, when it was almost about to collapse, and right at the moment it was about to collapse, the cavalry arrived in some form, and eventually I took the hint and I thought, this is telling me something. And what is it telling me? No need to worry about anything. And I stopped worrying. And my goodness me, how that disconnects you from these primitive emotional responses which control us. Yeah. You become laid back and at peace with self and at peace with the world. So I'm dealing now with all this real challenging information on one level and all these things that are going on. But I am as calm as you could imagine. I have no fear of it. I have no panic of it or anything, because I've gone into this space of everything will come to me as I need it. And I'm not going to worry about the future. I'm just going to live in the now. And that's another key thing. The understanding that there is no time. Everything happens in the now. People say, but there's a past. Okay. Where are you when you think of the past? Oh, well, I'm in the now, yeah. Where are you when you think of the future? Well, I'm in the now, yes. The past and the future are mental constructs which we experience in the now. And if we get pulled into the past of guilt and what if, and we get pulled into the future, oh my God, what's going to happen? I gotta, then we're not living in the now, and therefore we're not living in our power. And I could go on and on and on. There are so many ways that we can disconnect from this system, access our real power, and then this house of cards will come tumbling down.
And you will go on and on. You're traveling around the world. Ladies and gentlemen, check out his website, davidicke.com. David, in a couple seconds or less, tell us where you're coming. What cities?
I'm coming to Bellingham, which is just south of Vancouver, just north of Seattle, on October the 4th, talking for 8 hours all day, and Phoenix on the 17th of October, doing the same.